Minnesota.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big problem for them.
Yeah, that's the all these branch campuses are having.
Yeah.
Just I guess River Falls isn't a branch campus, but they're having tough times.
Oh yeah, Oshkosh is up a creek.
Yeah,
they're up a creek.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, we're okay. I mean, we compete with Winona State, but there's nothing in the Rochester area.
I was really gonna. I mean, when I think of like the University of Wisconsin, like the core schools, I think of here, Madison, and Milwaukee, pretty much.
For sure.
And then to a lesser extent, like Eau Claire and Whitewater or something that.
You know, we often. I mean, I shouldn't say this too loud because admissions is right there, but you know. Parents who think like Madison's too liberal, like doesn't get
right.
But also like students who don't get into Madison, and then students who.
Oh yeah, I had two or three friends who didn't get into the business school program
for sure.
So they came here, they did a couple years, and then they finished up there
for sure. Yep. For sure.
I am rolling, so whenever you're ready.
Cool. Okay. Cool. Any last questions?
I'm good.
Okay, we will jump right into it then. First question I got for you, big election last night. Who are the biggest winners and losers from the results?
Governor Evers and the Democratic Party, because the vote against the constitutional amendments was the decisive winner in that election. So when we look at that election, the ballot measures were worded in a very odd, confusing, lawyerly way. And so voters, when they looked at the text on the ballot for the amendments, they didn't have much to work with. That meant that Evers and the Democrats could make a big influence on voters through their campaign messaging. And Evers and the Democrats did indeed make a strong push against those amendments. They were able to engage and mobilize their base, and that led to the amendments getting defeated.
Yeah, so those amendments were defeated by a pretty large margin. Was that surprising at all to you?
It was, in the sense that a low turnout election is always hard to predict. We don't know how voters are going to go because we don't know who's going to show up at the polls. But turnout was quite high by the standards of August primaries, and that speaks to the ability of Evers and the Democrats to mobilize their base.
Are there any takeaways that you can take from the turnout, other than, you know, just the Democratic Party being able to turn out their base?
I think that's the number one takeaway I have. It's going to be hard to read too much into the August primary this year as it pertains to the November election, because the turnout in November will be over twice what it was in this year's August primary. So the electorate will look very different. You'll have more voters who kind of vote irregularly show up to the polls in November. The electorate for this August primary was comprised of voters who pay close attention to politics. And so that affected how these elections turned out.
So we'll turn a little bit now to some of these contested primaries that went on yesterday. In the 8th, Tony Weed, the MAGA candidate, the Trump-supported candidate, won. What does that say about the influence of MAGA when you had two other candidates, Roger Roth and Andre Jacques, who were endorsed by more traditional conservative Republican voices?
It shows that the Trump endorsement can matter in competitive Republican primaries. And we saw that just 2 years ago with Tim Michaels defeating Rebecca Clayfish in the Republican campaign for the gubernatorial nomination. Trump endorsed Michaels, and that, I think, put him over the top against Clayfish. And this time around, in the 8th Congressional District, I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump's endorsement of Tony Weed helped put him over the top. On top of that, Donald Trump spoke out against Roger Roth, the former state senator, who came in second in the race for the nomination against Weed. Roger Roth was called a rhino, or Republican in name only, by Donald Trump. So the campaign and Trump's influence in the campaign, I think, made a big effect on the outcome.
So in the 3rd, there was a Democratic primary contested between three people. Rebecca Cook came out on top. It was a pretty contentious last few weeks of the campaign. What kind of takeaways can you take from that race, and how is Cook going to face up against Derek Van Orden in the general election?
Yeah, Rebecca Cook is a very strong fundraiser, and the Democrats are going to need plenty of financial resources if they hope to unseat Derek Van Orden, because although this district here in western Wisconsin is competitive, it does lean a little bit in the Republican Party's favor. So Rebecca Cook will have a bit of an uphill battle ahead of her. That means that she'll need plenty of financial resources resources to launch a negative campaign against Derek Van Orden and to develop her own political brand. Core to her political brand is the idea that she's an outsider, which, interestingly, is the political brand that Derek Van Orden developed when he first ran for Congress. So it's interesting to see those parallels between the candidates, though the parallels basically start and end right there.
In congressional races in the 8th, Tony Weed won the MAGA candidate, but in some state elections, Tim Ramthan and Janelle Branchen both lost their primary elections. Is that surprising at all? Does that show that kind of this trend of election deniers winning office is kind of dying out, or is there really anything we can take away from that?
I think it shows that the influence of candidates denying the 2020 election result and the Trump endorsement factor is a little all over the place. It's hard to draw any consistent conclusions about how much it matters for a candidate to be skeptical or to deny the outcome of the previous presidential election, and how much it matters for Trump to endorse them. But clearly, with Tim Michels last cycle and with Tony Weed this cycle, we see that the Trump endorsement still matters quite a bit in certain circumstances in Republican primaries.
I lost my, this is being edited, so I can lose my place here for a second.
Take this part out.
Yeah. sorry, I got to cross some things out. Okay. the next question that I have is about the presidential and vice presidential candidates. They're going to be in Wisconsin a lot. They've already been in Wisconsin a lot. How do Harris and Walz play here, especially in western Wisconsin? And how do Trump and J.D. Vance play here?
Well, the Western Wisconsin region has been tilting a little more Republican in recent election cycles, but I don't see it as being overwhelmingly Republican by any stretch of the imagination. So I think there's going to be intense competition in the La Crosse area, in the Eau Claire area, and all of the surrounding areas, all of the areas in between among these presidential candidates. We already saw J.D. Vance, Tim Walz, and Kamala Harris in Eau Claire. I think we're going to see more of these candidates because this is that swing part of the state. There are certain regions that Democrats can bank on for a lot of votes. There are certain regions that Republicans can bank on for a lot of votes. But western Wisconsin is hard for either party to bank on, and that means that there will be a highly competitive campaign ahead of us here.
Do you think that Tim Walz has any additional sway here because of the proximity to Minnesota?
He might, and it could be because people in this area are familiar with his record. People here might have developed somewhat positive or negative impressions of how he has performed as governor of Minnesota. And his political style may resonate with voters in this area because he has that folksy Midwestern way about him. Too early to tell. In general, running mates don't have much of an effect at all on presidential election outcomes, but it'll still be worth watching to see how Western Wisconsin voters respond to the Walz running mate candidacy.
I'm going to go back to turnout here in the referendum question, because that was the end of my question, so I got a couple additional ones if they want to put them in there. La Crosse and Eau Claire overwhelmingly rejected these referendum amendments. Do you think that the Democratic primary had anything to do with that, or is that just another example of the Democratic base really turning out in this election?
I think it's both. The Democrats in this area were highly engaged by the primary election for Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district. There had been television advertisements, there had been events around the area, there had been a highly active campaign in this region for the Democratic nomination. So no doubt the Democratic voters in this region were mobilized. At the same time, the Wisconsin Democratic Party has built a highly impressive turnout and mobilization operation. And Governor Evers and the Wisconsin Democrats were obviously successful at getting the message across to their voters about which way they wanted people to vote on the amendment.
Are there any big winners or losers from these state-level primaries?
Good question. Well, I would have to mention Dane County turnout. I mean, Dane County's turnout was astronomical compared to the state as a whole. And that is yet another example of how Dane County is a powerhouse in the Democratic Party coalition. I think Democrats are looking at the near 50% turnout in the Madison area and licking their chops as they think ahead to what that might foreshadow for the general election ahead of us.
Any last takeaways from the primary last night?
Yeah, impressive voter turnout. It shows that voters were engaged to a somewhat surprising level by the standards of August primary elections.
Okay, that's all I got. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Cool.